Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with legendary jazz keyboardist and composer Mark Adams. We dug into his new 2026 album, This Is Neo Soul, and his illustrious career in the music. It was released just over a year after Mr. Roy Ayers' passing at 84, and gathers 15 all-star musicians from the working bands, not only of Roy Ayers, but also of Lonnie Liston Smith, Luther Vandross, Gloria Gaynor, Gil Scott-Heron, and Chaka Khan. He spent more than 20 years as the musical center of the Roy Ayers touring group, Ubiquity, the long-running, ever-evolving band that Ayers used to carry his sound around the world, serving as keyboardist, arranger, and onstage ballast throughout thousands of shows. True to its present tense title, This Is Neo Soul isn't a gaze into the rearview mirror. It's a continuation of language that Mark has lived for more than two decades. It's a powerful album, wonderful story. Dig this interview. Good to meet you, man. Thank you so much for taking a minute out today.
No problem.
I love the album. I've loved your work. I've had it on the show quite a bit, so this is quite an honor to be able to catch up with you. So again, thank you for taking a minute out.
Oh, wow. I appreciate it. I appreciate you even having the interest.
Oh, man. Oh, are you kidding me? I love it. It's wonderful. So before we get into the new album, I want to know this. You know, 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing our lives, changing the trajectory of all musicians. How did you get through that era, and how has it changed the way that you approach music and life today?
Well, it definitely tells you not to take anything for granted. So during that period, it was hard for Roy at that time because we had like 20 dates canceled right away. So, I'm a single dad, so I was raising my daughter. She was in ninth grade, having to sit at the kitchen table to get on Zoom. So it was a whole different thing that to deal with. Musically, I just spent the time practicing. And then I would go to Roy's house to keep him in shape, keep his mind active, and go in, and I brought my keyboard over there and left it. And so he could just, me and him play standards, different songs. And we did that throughout the pandemic. No shows.
Yeah, for sure. So talk to me about the new material. Talk to me about, the new single, Open Letter, the new album, This Is Neo. So what was the vision? How did all of this come about?
It really came about through David Swartz from Down Jazz Records. He approached me about doing a record. At first, I wasn't interested in doing another record because I had a studio release before COVID called I Forgot to Remember to Forget that featured Roy Ayers and Ron Carter in that record. And the producer of that record passed away, and that kind of crushed me. So I just needed to take a break, and I did. And then David approached me about doing it, and then he explained his concept as to what he wants to do. And he felt I was going to be a perfect person to do it because I played with all of those guys in their past era, in the later part of their year, Wayne Henderson, Roy Ayers, Lonnie Liston Smith, John Lucien, you name it, Tom Brown. I played with all of them, Ronnie Laws. I can keep going. So I know that old school sound. And the good thing is I kind of modernized it. I did that with Roy's set, like all of the Sunshine and all of those songs. We did it in a new way, in a new way. Didn't do it like the record. And but Roy has always took pride in wanting his musicians to evolve and help his music to evolve. And Miles Davis did the same thing. According to Ron Carter, Miles Davis changed his band. He didn't change his music, but the band changed how his music sounded sonically. So that's what I did with Roy, and that's how I approached this record. And I have some great singers on it, some great bass players. My drummer is on every song, and have horns. It's full of improvisation, percussion, but it's still dance music. Yeah. And I had never done a dance record. So it kind of took me out of my comfort zone doing something different because most of my records were instrumental. This record is, there's only one instrumental track, and that's the last song.
You had mentioned Miles, and I look at the modern landscape of albums that are coming out and how sound has evolved, even since he was around in the late 80s, but he went through such a chameleon phase in his life.
Right.
How do you feel about modern music and what you're creating and what the jazz world is putting out? Do you feel like we're evolving? Do you feel like we're modern jazz and music is in a good place?
I do. I do. I really do. It's one thing that Warriors used to tell me, and it stuck with me, and he said it often. You got to keep innovating. Got to keep innovating. Got to keep innovating. Keep doing new music. Keep pushing the envelope. So I kept that in mind, especially doing this record. Like Sweet Tears, the original version of it is slow. I made it really fast, up tempo, danceable. I did, and then Don't Stop. I did it differently, and I put up my own intro on top of it. So it was deceptive. You thought it was going to be a ballad, then we go into this up-tempo thing. So, yeah. Open Letter, I wrote that. And then Kimberly Davis and my drummer, Chris DeCarmine, kind of reimagined the lyrics that I had. So I had this melodic theme going on throughout the whole song, and then it was, and then they had this counter melody vocally. So I think things like that is innovative. I think everybody's changing how they approach music. I've watched so many artists do that, and I think we're still evolving. I think we're still figuring it out.
So, at the end of the day, what are you hoping the listener gets from this new album?
Oh, I hope they feel good. I hope they dance. I hope they smile. I hope they continue to look forward because I wrote a song called "Don't Look Back," and on that record, and that's just we have things that happen in our past that we can't change it. So you can't dwell on it. You have to move forward. We all have made decisions in the past that aren't very good. So I feel that that people can listen to it and change how they look at life and everything. And it's uplifting expansions. Listen to the lyrics for all of these songs. That was why David Swartz wanted lyrics, because it really puts the listener in a very different place to hear it, and it's a feel-good place.
And we need that more than ever in America right now. There's been,
Oh, who are you telling?
man, I mean,
Who are you telling?
we've gone through so much. And I mean, how do you survive this clown show that we're going through? Your music's optimistic. What you want people to get is what we need. How are you keeping your chin up and as a part of a creative world that's going to help us get through this? Art's going to save us, and we need it.
I'm very disappointed. My Ina Ditka is my booking agent. And she lives between London and Florida, but she's been since this guy's been in, she spends all her time in England. Now, I had a European tour I was supposed to embark on in July, at the end of July, and she called me yesterday saying because of the tariffs and they have to buy visas for my band, and the price tripled to buy a visa, the working visas that I've done all my life going to Europe, and the visas are like triple the cost for the promoter. Then with the gas prices going up for the cars, that's one thing. That's already bad. But just imagine the airline, and it costs the tickets going to Europe from America are just outrageous. And Ina's telling me that they may have to postpone this tour because of that. And That's very disheartening and disappointing, and knowing that we have 2 more years with this guy.
I know. Man.
But hopefully we can get the House and Senate and slow him down a little
That's
bit.
it. Yeah, we need to. We need to in a big way. So, was it always going to be music for you? Take me back to your beginnings. Did you always dream of being a musician?
Well, I didn't. My father was a Broadway musician and a classical musician. He played all the woodwinds. And I didn't like how they treated him on Broadway. But that came later. But in the earlier, and my mom was a music teacher. So I got it naturally, but I wanted to be a veterinarian. I was into animals. But then I couldn't get it. I wasn't accepted into this particular program in high school that I wanted to get into. So I'd already been taking piano lessons. I was already at a pretty good level because I'd been playing since I was 5. So I took a stab at playing music and I enjoyed it and had a band while I was in high school. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Do you remember the first big show that you saw that blew you away? When you were at that age where you were thinking about getting in the music business, was there a band or a show that just absolutely stymied you?
I sat behind Eddie Palmieri at the Blue Note when I was in high school, and I sat behind Michel Camille, same spot at the Blue Note because it was cheap to go in there, especially as a student. So I would go in for free, but it doesn't matter now, they charge for everything. But at that time, I would get to hear a lot of artists, and I started as a classical because my father was classical, so he made me go through the whole classical training. But I wanted to play jazz after hearing it. And there was a guy, are you in New York?
Kansas City.
Kansas City. That's my favorite football team is there,
I
the
like it.
Chiefs.
It's mine too.
That's my favorite team.
Yeah.
Yep. But in there was a newscaster that's what turned my ear to jazz because I was always playing Bach and Mozart when I was younger. And but then when I was in high school, I turned on the news and the weather guy played piano. After he did the weather, he'd get on the piano and play rhythm changes and soloing. I said, I want to learn how to do that. So my father got me a jazz teacher. I started with Kenny Barron, and then I went with Dennis Morman, Jackie Byard, studied with a lot of great jazz players, straight ahead cats. So that's what got me into the whole improvisation. I enjoy improvising. I enjoy that much better, more than just reading music and just reading Bach inventions. Even though Bach was one of the first improvisers when he wrote those Bach inventions, they all improvised and later transcribed. But I wanted to just improvise. That was my thing. I wanted to learn the jazz vocabulary, and I already had the technique from playing classical. So it's just a matter of applying the vocabulary and then gaining the feel. And then later I got into the R&B funk and then combining both of those worlds. So by the time I could, because I did a lot of R&B tours, but I always wanted to play jazz. But I played with Bell Biv DeVoe. I played with Mary J. Blige, Erica, a whole bunch of R&B people. But I would be one of three keyboard players because those R&B tours, they rehearse like crazy. And then, I mean, 8 hours of rehearsal, and then they play the same show, no improvisation. They played just like the record, and you had to play your same part every night. Drove me crazy. So, I got the opportunity through that, doing that. I met Roy Ayers' musical director at the time, Zachary Breaux, who was a guitarist, and he took a liking to me. And I was playing in his band. So when Roy Ayers' keyboard player left to go with George Howard, he asked me would I want to do it. And at the time, I didn't know who Roy was. And I said, sure, because he took me to this place in Harlem where Roy used to play just to keep the band tight. And and it would be lying around the block, and if we couldn't even get in, we just stood at the window, and I was listening to him playing all of this jazz on top of a funky beat. I said, "I love that. I love that. I want to do that." And the rest is history.
So when you watched your father be a musician and he was in the creative arts world, you saw probably early on the early seeds of how that world and how that life was going to be. What was the big difference when you decided that you were going to do it and you started getting out there and having gigs and getting paid and being a part of that community? What was the difference between what you saw and what you lived?
What I saw was, I didn't like how they treated my dad on Broadway. And you know, black musicians weren't given an opportunity to play in orchestras. It's still the case now. It's more than it used to be when I was a kid and watching my dad go through that struggle. And then when he was doing Broadway, they only called him to do the black shows. And then eventually he started doing other shows, but the politics on Broadway turned me off because my father he was subbing for this guy at Katz for 2 months, 8 shows a week for 2 months, and then the guy finally just left Katz and retired. Now you could have bet any amount that my father would have gotten the show as his show, as a permanent player, and they overlooked him and called somebody else. And I watched that happen time after time, and I said, "No, I don't want to do that." And my father told me, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to play with the artists, a jazz artist, and tour. I want to do that." And he said, "Well, have tunnel vision on how you think about it, and make that the only thing you think about, and it'll come to fruition." And it did. So.
Wow. So you've had the chance to perform with so many legendary, luminary bands and cats throughout your career. All these stages, all these fans. But what was the first stage you stepped on where you were kind of like beside yourself thinking, man, I'm here, I'm on this stage? Did you have a moment like that?
I did two moments like that. The very first show I did with Roy was at this huge club in Dallas, Fort Worth, called Caravan of Dreams. Two levels. It was massive, huge stage. I'd never seen or been on a stage like that before, and I didn't know what to do. I was Roy. Told me, "Stop acting like you're scared of the keyboards." And he said they're not gonna bite you. So I didn't like him saying that to me either. So because I was scared to make mistakes, and that was one thing he taught me: don't be that. We're jazz musicians, and sometimes a mistake can be beautiful. And Ron Carter said the same thing. He said Miles Davis, Herbie, one time, there's a song called "So What," and it's only two chords, but there's a form. Herbie went to the wrong section, and he felt so embarrassed. But Miles played his wrong notes. He went to the wrong section. Miles just went with him and played with it. So Roy is like that. Roy said, "Just go for it. Go for it. Don't be afraid of making mistakes." So my first show with Roy, I was just at soundcheck, I was playing just careful, and he didn't like that. And he said, "I need you to loosen up and let your mind go and play this music and have fun. Music's supposed to be fun. You're making it tense, and you're making me stressed, you know, because he's looking at me all serious and worried." So I got the net. The next thing was playing Ronnie Scott's in London, and I was blown away there too. It was just amazing. And we used to play there. I've been to London more than I've been anywhere in the States. We would play 6 weeks every twice a year. Amazing. And the line would be around the corner every two shows a night. And we play Monday through Saturday.
You mentioned Kenny in the beginning being a teacher, and then you talk about Roy, and there's so many names that you've put out there. Being around those people, I know for me, just being able to interview and even interviewing you, you possess this level of wisdom and hopefulness. It just comes out of you. What did you learn from all of these musicians, the legends and luminaries throughout the year that not only made you grow as a human, but made you understand the music and why you were doing what you're doing, why you picked this profession of giving people music?
Because it is so amazing to watch people who love this music listen to it live, and how it makes them feel, and then especially watching the young people take on this music, and just how music just makes people feel, and how it inspires people, whether you're a musician or a doctor. I have a friend who my neighbors used to think I was always getting in trouble because he would come to my house to take piano lessons, and he would be in his whole uniform, and he'd come just to get on the piano before he starts his shift. He did it, and he would do it often, and because music is a state of mind, it's a state of feeling. So what happens is good for your soul. So it doesn't matter what level you're on. It's just being able to play something, the most simplest song, but it makes you feel good. So I always inspire people to, if you want to play an instrument, it's never too late. Try it. So between them playing it or listening or being exposed to something different, it's beautiful to watch. So I like that. And I just listening to Wayne Henderson and Joe Sample and George Duke. Alex Bunyan was one of my favorite people when I was in high school. And when I met him, he wasn't very nice at first. And same thing with Joey DeFrancesco. But he caught himself. They both apologized later, but they didn't like me with this young energy asking questions, and how'd you do that? And what were you thinking that? And they wanted to just eat breakfast. So that it was still nice. The spirit of music is just unbelievable. And watching those musicians play with such passion and grace. And we would be on tour and we played sometimes the same music, but we played different. Every night something magical happens on stage. And I love the fact that these musicians encourage that. They said, have fun with it, have fun with it. Let's try this. Let's do this on the bridge this time. Let's have this little Latin section right here. Let's try that. Let's do a drum break right here. Things that we just think about. So watching them as band leaders shaped me as a band leader to be open to new ideas from your other musicians.
So on the base level, you get to create this music and create something that people love. What is that every day for you that you look forward to being a professional musician? Why do you love this work that you do? And you've done it for decades, you've evolved. What is that base love for you every day when you wake up?
Oh wow. I wake up and listen to it and just say, wow, I can't believe I did this. And David is a great producer, David Swartz, fantastic producer. And he allowed me to take my time. This record took 2 years. And most of my other records, I did a turnaround in 6 months. Most of them. I turned the record to the record label 6 months. I'd go in, knock it out, get it done fast. This one, I'd go in the studio and we would sit back, and me and David would listen to it, and he'll say, we should have horns on this. We should put vocals, definitely put vocals. definitely put vocals in. And we just took our time. And watch doing when you're in the process, you don't realize it. But when I listen to it now, I'm like, oh wow, this record is really, really good. And I just remember the process it took to get to this point. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was.
So, Mark, at the end of the day, everyone has a perception of you. Family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, everyone on the business end, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
I just think I'm someone who is always looking to learn new things, open to new ideas, and always trying to learn. And I listen to the younger people, what they're playing. And the one thing I do is I only I don't I never I was never into competitiveness. Even though I play when I'm playing sports, I am, but other when I'm playing music, I don't compare myself to other musicians. And I try to compare myself to who I was yesterday and how I sounded yesterday. Can I sound better? Can I do this better? And that's who I am. When I first saw George Duke play the guitar, that's when I wanted to learn that. And before I actually took it on the road and did shows with it, I sat home for hours because I wanted to play it with the same speed that I play piano. So I had to practice because you're playing it this way. It's a different angle. So these are little things that I try to do, and always trying to learn, always trying to learn. I've learned from the best ever. I remember learning from Herbie Hancock. And one time we were in Europe, I was with Roy, and it was like we're in Germany, and then they come to Germany and we go to another city, and it was like that. So we were in the lobby, Roy and the rest of the band, we were getting ready to leave. And Herbie was just arriving. So we're in the hotel, they're checking in, we're checking out. So I'm sitting there while the road managers are doing their thing. And I'm talking to Herbie Hancock, and he's talking to me about the diminished scale and everything. But he had one of those piano briefcases, little piano. I had the same one, identical. So anyway, Roy said, "Let's go." So I said, "Okay." I grabbed Herbie's
Uh-oh.
and I left. And then Herbie's road manager said, "Your piano player took Herbie's bag." And I said, Roy came to me where I was sitting and said, "Do you have Herbie's bag?" And I said, "No, this is my bag." And I had a lot of silly stuff. I had comic books, I had books, I had a chess set, all kinds of silly stuff in my bag. And then I look in Herbie's bag and his music and these big professional headphones. And I said, "Yeah, I have his bag." So he came to the show the next day, and we were on stage and playing, and Roy called him up to play. And my dumbass said to Herbie Hancock, the master, I said, "Oh, hey man, let me show you the changes." And he just looked at me. I wanted to fall through the stage because he said, "Just pay attention, young blood." I said, "All right." And he was wicked. I said, "What an amazing person and just a great individual." So I find that all the best musicians are humble and nice to everybody, and they don't look at themselves as being above anybody. And I learned that from all the artists that I've been around and worked under. They are just so humble and nice to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to catch you live, obviously the album's streaming everywhere. If they want to pick up a physical copy, any of the good business, where's the best place to go?
It's not on my website right now, and it's the record company is really controlling this record because when digital music started happening, a lot of record companies folded because you couldn't keep track, because once it comes out digital, It's everywhere, and you can't even control where it's at, and there's so many streaming platforms. So they only released four songs, digital. So you can only buy the physical, the vinyl or CD. There's plenty of places to buy it, on Amazon and many other places. And they did so much press on this record, and I was impressed with how much they're doing with the record. The whole team is great. So the if you Google Mark Adams, This Is Neo Soul, pages and pages come up. That's the way to get it. But I definitely recommend everyone buying it. So I think it's good. I think it's good. What's your favorite song?
You know what? I think on the show I did the main single on there that came out. But I've been really pouring through it, and I'm gonna kind of cherry pick and get it kind of incrementally in 3 month time. I do a weekly show, so I'm
Oh,
gonna
okay.
really get it in there. And like I said, I've played your music historically on the show and Roy's music. So man, it's a horn of plenty. There's a lot going on, and I just when I orchestrate my weekly list, I kind of have a theme, a vibe that I'm going
Okay.
for. So when
That's
it
awesome.
fits, I get it in there.
My
Good.
favorite song on this record, at first it was Don't Stop, because that's my favorite Roy Ayers song. And I love Sweet Tears. I love how the vocalist, what he did on that, and the way he changed it. We made it a whole different song, but it's still Sweet Tears. It's still Roy Ayers' song. But the song that really stood out to me, and it seems like the younger people who buy it, like my vibraphone player who has it, and he's a young guy, and he loves Talking Walls. And I said, let me listen to that. I remember when we were in the studio doing it, and the singer who sang on it, the lyrics, and the changes, the chords that I put on it, it's just amazing how that song came together. And that's one of my favorites. Love it. I keep that on repeat.
I'm old school. I get the CD, and I got a CD chamber in my car. So I love watching the world go by and just taking it in whole, like vinyl, just like start to finish, and it's just a whole organism. I don't like to cherry pick, and I sometimes I do the playlist, but I usually like to go start to finish. So yeah, it's an adventure every time.
I do. I like to do that too. I do. I like to do that. I drive my daughter crazy because she said, "Dad, could you close my door?" Because I'm playing it. I'll play from start to finish. And it takes you through, it takes you through amazing emotions, and then it ends with the instrumental, which is real laid back and cool. So,
It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful.
and I
This
appreciate that.
has been an honor. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking
No,
the long
thank
trip.
you. I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and cats in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Mark. It was an honor. Thank you for swinging by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.